You see a door. Above the door is written, Thanksgiving or Thanksgaming? Welcome again to the Doors and Dungeons Retro Gaming Podcast, and happy Thanksgiving! What's that sound I hear? It sounds like music and the rustling of a fireplace. Well, it's Thanksgiving all over again, right? But this time, instead of Thanksgiving holiday music, we're listening to Melodies and Harmonies, a fan album tribute to the E-Series. And so I just wanted to take a quick moment before we get all into this to say thank you to the people who made this album. And also Alice for allowing me to use it. And I want to say also you can check it out on Bandcamp. And I'll try to put the link in the description so you can check that out. Because it's a really, really good album with a lot of really good fan mixes of E's music that's really, really true to the core idea of the songs. And I think that's really important and special because sometimes fan tribute albums are not that way, and sometimes even corporate remake albums are not that way, but this one is. So, thank you so much. So, Thanksgiving is over now, of course, but I wanted to take just a little bit of time and do something kind of different. So, instead of doing an episode about one particular game or one particular system or something, I've decided to do what I'm calling Thanksgaming. Now, what is Thanksgaming? Okay, it's simple. Thanksgiving is supposed to be a time where we talk about all the things that you're thankful for, food, family, your job, just everything that makes your year great, right? And so, gaming often makes my year great, so what we're going to do is we're going to talk about all the games that I think are important to me and I'm thankful for. So, before we get started with that, I want to talk to you just a little bit about something new that I've got going on. A way that you can show your thanks back to me for this podcast. Yes, that's right. It's shameless money plug. No, it's Patreon. Woo! Yes, I have created a Patreon account. So, if you would like to get involved and try to help really keep this podcast alive, you can. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/doorsanddungeons. Also, there's a link on Podomatic if you're looking at Podomatic, and I'll try to put a link in with the podcast description as well, so you can check that out. And we've got several different things that we're going to be doing with that. I've got several different tiers, and they're very interesting. One, not really, actually, but one of the tiers is where you will, just for a few dollars, you will be able to get early access to the podcast. And it's probably going to be a few days to a week. I haven't really knocked that down yet because I haven't figured out exactly how the whole early podcasting RSS feed works yet. But as soon as I figure that out, I'll have that ready to go. But please feel free to do that if you want to support the podcast. And there's also Mookmaker. Well, you're going to get your name in my first book or any other books that I do after that if you want to continue doing that. So that's something that's there. There's going to be... let's see here, we've got Guest What, which is a tier in which you can either be a guest on the podcast or you can say something that you want to talk about and I'll talk about it within a few limitations, of course. But you can have a direct impact on the episode. And then there's a big tier that probably no one's ever going to actually join called oldschool.matrixmook. Bum, 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 bum. So, I have a printer. It is a PC98 printer, and it is a dot matrix printer, and I have worked on the ribbon and worked on cleaning it and trying getting it up and running again. Had to redo a whole lot of stuff with that printer. I've got it working. I think I've got it working really, really well, and as really, really well as it can for a printer that's that old. Anyway, my goal is, if you sign up for this tier, you will get a copy of my book, not printed on a lovely hard binding from Amazon with all these beautiful modern pictures and all this kind of lovely stuff that they have. No, you will get a MOOC the way a MOOC is supposed to be printed. From a dot matrix printer. Yes, I will print out the text of my entire book on this printer. And then I will put it in a 3-ring binder, and I'll probably like paste in some pictures and photographs and stuff from the book. And I'll make a cover, which I will glue to the front of the binder, because that's what you're supposed to do. And you will have an option to buy the most retro version of my book possible, a dot matrix printed copy. So there's a few things you can do there. The simplest thing is just sign up for $3 and you'll get my ever-loving gratitude, and you'll also get an opportunity to hear the podcast just a little bit sooner than everyone else. So that's the end of the shameless plug. Now let's go into Thanksgiving. And to start off with Thanksgiving, I have written out my show notes for today in BASIC on the PC8801, the NEC PC8801 in 88 BASIC. So now I just need to type in a few commands here, clear the screen, and then we'll hit list. No, sorry, no, that one. Let's do that. Let's do run, and there's Thanksgiving holiday list. Okay, the first game on this list is sort of two games, actually. It's sort of a lot of games because it's been remade and redone so many times, ported. It's Ys 3, Wanderers from Ys, / Ys 3, Oathenfelgana, or Ys Oathenfelgana. I actually guess Oathenfelgana is not called Ys 3. But this game is super important to me, and it's actually on the top of my list for some very, very personal reasons. One of these reasons is that it's the game that got me to actually sit down and play the Ys series. And the Ys series is a series that I didn't know anything about when I was younger. I'd always heard about it. It was always showing up anytime, like, you would look at a website with ROMs or stuff like that. You would see it in the list and you would go, what's that game? And I never really knew anything about it, but I was always looking at it. And I just didn't really play them. And I had no idea these games were going to be like exactly what I wanted in game. So fast forward to like 2006 or 2007, I don't remember exactly when it was. I guess it would have been around 2007. I'm looking online. I'm at the college that I was going to at the time. It's a community college, and we had this lobby. It was this building that was shaped like a pyramid, like a stepped pyramid, like a ziggurat kind of shape, okay? It was a really weird building. And on the top floor of this building was a lobby, and it was weird because there was a glassed-in staircase that went through the middle of the building. So it was this, the lobby was kind of like a rectangular-shaped lobby with this big glass staircase around it. I mean, the staircase wasn't glass, but it was a staircase with glass walls all the way around it, okay? So, this lobby had these weird, like, support frames that were, like, angled support frames and all this kind of stuff. It was just a bizarre-looking building, and we all hung out there on the top floor of the lobby, and we played games. All of the nerdy people hung out there. And we were watching a video, and I don't remember why we were watching this video, but we were watching a video about video game music, like, the best rockin' video game music, and one of the songs on there was the Oathenfelgana version of Valstein Castle. And I was like, wow, that's great. But at the same time, they also had a video clip of the game, Oathenfelgana. And, you know, by the time you get to that point in the game, you're just running and hacking, and it's just really fast-paced and crazy. And I was like, this is awesome! What is this game? I looked in the comments list, and it was like, oh, it's Oathenfelgana from the Ys series. And I was like, oh, huh. So I immediately started looking up information about this. And lo and behold, I shortly found the Ancient Land of Ys forums. And that was a big turning point in my life, because finding those forums, I met some amazing people. And these people are people that have stayed in my life, many of them that I still talk to now, and have seen in person, and they just all throughout this list of games and things that I'm thankful for, and this podcast itself also, there are connections to that forum. And the E-Series, it really, really made me so much more interested in Japan and personal computers, because, you know, before then, I was just about Nintendo and Super Nintendo and all that kind of stuff, but I hadn't really learned anything about these computer systems. And Ease 3 and Oath and Felghana, but after, you know, playing Oath and Felghana, I found it on a website or something, and I found the recent translation that was done. I don't remember exactly when that translation was done, but I found the fan translation, and then I found a copy of the game somehow, and then I started playing, and I thought this was great, and so I wanted to know more, and so I started looking at all the other different games, and that's how I got into the MSX, and the PC-88, and then the PC-98, but I didn't have any of the systems, so I was like, I have to go to Japan and get these, and I was already planning to go to Japan anyway, but Ease became a huge driving force for me to make sure that I fulfilled my goals. And the Ease forums was an important thing too, because like I said, some of these people were really important. A couple years after this, I went through a really rough period with my family where I was basically disowned a couple months before Christmas, and I had nobody for Christmas. I was all by myself. I had no buddy to go back to. So I was living in I had gone on to a different college now. I was, you know, moved up to a 4-year college after the community college. And I was alone. And I had no presents or anything. And presents was always kind of a big thing to me, because it was the one thing that we had with our family, was opening up presents on Christmas Day. It was the kind of the most important part of Christmas for me, not just the getting stuff, but just the being with family and opening things. I really like surprises. So some of the fans, my friends from the fan forum, sorry, let me clarify that there, put it backwards, they got together and they all ordered stuff for me from my Amazon wish list and sent them to me so that I would have presents from people that were, you know, acting as my new family to make sure that I was okay. And I am forever grateful for that. And I have always tried hard to give back in some way when possible. I try to every year, I usually do an Amazon wish list exchange with some people and that kind of thing to try and, you know, make sure that I give back somehow. So, for those reasons, Ease 3, Oath and Felghana, those are very important games to me. And I really actually like Ease 3, the original versions. I have every version now, I think. I think I have every version of it that's been released so far. All the Oath and Felghana releases, which is there's mainly really the one release, and then it gets updated for Windows 8, and then updated for Windows 10, or whatever, you know. But I've got the PC-88 version and the PC-98 version. I think I've got the 5 1/4 and 3-inch floppy versions. I've got the X68000 version. You know, I've just got the Mega Drive, the American Mega Drive version with that ridiculous box art, and the Japanese Mega Drive version with really cool box art. It's very simple and plain. It looks like a stone ruin with some vines on it. I've got all kinds of different versions of these three. I like that game a lot, even though it's not really all that good of a game. Recently, when I went back to America to get my some stuff done, I got the PC Engine version. The American Turbo Duo, I guess you could say, version of Ease 3. So that's really cool. That was the last one that I didn't have, so I've got them all now. Yay! And by the way, I am planning to do a book about the Ease series with photographs of every game in the Ease series, at least everyone that I can find. I've got all of them, I think, except for the Fujitsu FM7s, which are really hard to find. So stay tuned for that, because that's going to be coming up later. Okay, next. Let's move on to Castlevania Symphony of the Night. Yes, this is another game that I'm really, really thankful for, because it awakened my love for the Castlevania series. Castlevania game was a game that I missed completely as a kid. You know, there's some games, when you're a kid and you're not in control of what games you get and what games you don't get, you just miss stuff sometimes. Because your family didn't buy it for you, or you didn't know about it, or maybe sometimes you saw it at your friend's house and was like, oh, I'm not very good at that. And so you just miss out on a series like that. And Castlevania was one of those for me. So around 1999 or 2000, I guess it was, I had been hanging out with this friend of mine who was the son of the pastor at the church that we were going to, that my mom went to. And he was really cool. He wasn't like, you know, your typical pastor kid stereotype. His family really allowed him a lot of freedom to express himself and not be constrained by that whole lifestyle. So he turned out really cool. And I remember one day we were at his house and we were looking through his drawer and there was some games and stuff. And I don't remember why, but he asked me to look for something. And underneath a pair of socks in his drawer was Castlevania Symphony of the Night. And I was like, what's this game? And he was like, oh, yeah, that. Oh, it was alright. You know, I beat it a while ago and then I just haven't played it in a while. And I looked at the back and I thought, well, this looks cool. And I was like, can I play it? He said, sure. Yeah, just go ahead and borrow it. I said, okay. So I borrowed it, and I guess, I don't remember having a PlayStation 1, but I guess I did, or at least I had borrowed one or something, or maybe I emulated it, I don't know. But anyway, I guess I had gotten one around this time. So, I put it in the PlayStation 1, and I started playing it, and I was like, wow, this game is really good. And so I went back to him, and I was like, hey, you know, this game is really good. And he was like, yeah, it was pretty good. I thought it was a little short. So I was like, oh, okay. So I played it some more, and we were talking about it at the church. And the guy who was like an assistant youth pastor or something at the time was like, oh, yeah, that game. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm near the end, and I'm about to beat it and everything. And my friend was like, you know, oh, yeah, I already beat everything. And this youth pastor guy was like, yeah, did you do the second castle? And we're like, what? He's like, yeah, there's a second castle. And I was like, oh, okay, how do I do that? And he's like, well, you got to go and find this item and do this thing and then meet Marie and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, okay. And my friend was just kind of like, what? So, my friend had not played the second half of the game, which I think is a very common thing for that game that happened quite a lot. And so we found out exactly how to do it, and I went home and I did everything I needed to do, and I got to the second castle and I was like, wow, this game is so great, and all that kind of thing. And my friend was like, okay, as soon as you finish this game, you gotta give it back to me. So I was like, okay. So I did. I gave it back to him. He played through it again, and he was like, wow, this game is so much better than I thought. Like, there's so much more to it. And then he got to that one part with the Lord of the Flies. What is his name? Not Abaddon. What is his name? A giant fly monster. Apollyon? No, not Apollyon. I don't remember. Maybe it is Abaddon. I don't know. The giant monster that's hanging on meat things and they're flying hangs off. Flies flying around hang out of me. Yeah, that freaked him out. But whatever. And so, we had a lot of fun with that game. And after that, I started thinking, wow, I need to play this series some more. And I guess, now that I think about it, it wasn't 2000. It would have been a little bit after that. This would have been around 2002, probably. So I got a hold of some, maybe it might have even been 2003. I got a hold of some of the Game Boy Advance versions, and I didn't like Circle of the Moon all that much, but I did kind of like Harmony of Dissonance, and so I played that a little bit, and then I started going back and trying to play some of the older Castlevania games, and I just started falling in love with Castlevania, and I got my other friend to play it, and he thought this game was great, and I really started developing a big fan love for Castlevania, and it was one of the very first games that I can really say that I fell in love with the soundtrack completely. Because before that, you know, Final Fantasy and Chrono Trigger and role-playing games had soundtracks that really moved me and I was really into them. But as far as, like, a game where the soundtrack was one of the primary focuses and reasons to even play the game, Castlevania became that for me. And even now, I don't like to play a Castlevania game if it's not got as good of a soundtrack, so that means those awful remux, whatever you call them, Castlevania games, the Mercury Steam ones, they ruined them by ruining the soundtrack, by making, like, that's the soundtrack, is, I'm like, really, that's it? That's Castlevania? So, yeah, I didn't like that very much. But Castlevania Symphony of the Night is a great, great game. If you've never played it, you can get it on a bunch of different things. There was a recent remix make of it on PS4 that just came out for Halloween, along with Dracula X, Rondo of Blood, which is another game that's technically on this list, and I'll explain why. Rondo of Blood, Dracula X, is a game that I always thought that I was never going to be able to own. Now, after getting interested in Symphony of the Night and all that kind of stuff, I started playing more and more Castlevania games. Around 2006 or so, I found out about Dracula X, and I just thought, I want to play this game so badly, but I knew that it was impossible for me to get a PC engine and the game. I saw one at a convention one time, like an anime convention. And I think they wanted, like, $200 for the game, or something like that. You know how it is. And this was like, you know, this was several years ago. I mean, this was 10 years ago. It was even more than 10 years ago, I guess. And so I just thought, well, that's never going to happen. It'd be so cool, but it's never going to happen. And I think I also saw the Sega Saturn version of Symphony of the Night, and also thought, well, that's never going to happen. But I thought, well, I could emulate this game. So I tried emulating Rondo of Blood, and it was okay, and I played it a little bit, but it didn't work great. And then it came out on the Wii Virtual Console, and I was like, oh, okay, awesome, now I can play this game. So I got it, and I played it, and I loved it, and I really did. I mean, I really loved that game on the Wii Virtual Console, and it was great. But it wasn't owning it, right? So in 2013... after a whole lot of things had changed in my life, I got the opportunity to study Japanese in Japan. Study English in Japan? Okay. And so I got to spend 2 months in Fukuoka. And while I was there, one of the very first things that I did was I had saved up my money and I went out and bought a PC engine. And when I got to Fukuoka, I bought the PC engine in Tokyo. I had one day in Tokyo. And then I went on to Fukuoka, and there at the Mandarake in Fukuoka, near Tenjin Station, I found Dracula X, and it was like 9,000 yen, which at the time seemed like a lot. But I thought, well, it's a lot cheaper than the $200 that it was in America, so I'm buying it. So I did, and I brought it back. Ooh, I'm so glad I did that, because now that game sells for 30,000 yen and is like a $400 game in America, which is still, I think, is overpriced because the game's not that rare. It's not as bad as Vampire Killer. That game is way overpriced and not rare at all. But in general, yeah, it was a good deal. And so I'm really, really thankful that I had the opportunity to do that. And so I thank Castlevania Symphony of the Night for giving me the opportunity to fall in love with the Castlevania series, play all these wonderful games that I've really, really come to love, and meet some cool people along the way as well, and have an opportunity to experience that in Japan. And I did a lot of things because of that game too. Like, I took the soundtrack, and I would go out in my car with these friends that I had at the time, and we would go late at night, like 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, and we would just drive around at night, and I would play Symphony of the Night music. And I would drive down these roads, and it'd be like mist and fog and stuff. And I would find the most creepy, abandoned roads. And I would drive down there listening to this music with my friends. And they would just get so freaked out. And I thought it was the most hilarious thing in the world. But they loved it, my Castlevania tours that I would do. And I did other stuff too with the Symphony of the Night. Like, If you've ever seen the movie Nosferatu, the 1922 silent film with Max Schreck, directed by... who directed that movie? I suddenly can't remember the name of the director of that movie. But anyway, it was the supposedly destroyed Dracula silent film. It was like a Dracula knockoff. Well, it was originally going to be Dracula, and then they got into a lawsuit with Bram Stoker's wife, and so they changed the name, but then she won the lawsuit anyway, and so they had to destroy all the copies. But some survived, and now we have the movie. If you've ever seen that movie, you know, it's a silent film, so all the soundtracks for it are made soundtracks, because usually silent films had a player at the theater playing it on a piano or organ or whatever, so that it was live music. So you can create your own soundtrack, and what I used to do was I would have parties where I would take Nosferatu and I would sync up Castlevania Symphony of the Night music to it, and if you do it right, if you arrange the playlist just right, you don't actually even have to do that, you can just play it straight through with the CD, but if you really take the time to arrange the playlist just right, you can make an awesome, awesome experience with Nosferatu and Castlevania music. And so that's something that I like to do, and it's another reason why I'm thankful for Castlevania Symphony of the Night. The next game that I'm thankful for is The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening on the Game Boy. I love this game so much. I can't even begin to tell you how much I love this game. This is probably my all-time favorite Zelda game, and probably my all-time favorite Game Boy game. I adore this game. It's so cool. Now, I'm writing a book. In fact, I've already written it, and I'm just doing the editing and putting in pictures and all that kind of stuff, and I actually plan to have it out sometime early 2019. That's my goal. And this game is heavily featured in that book, because this book is all about my memories of gaming. It's sort of reviews of games, of every game that I played when I was a kid, up through high school. But it's also my memories with those games. So it's both subjective and objective. And one of the reasons why I wanted to write it was because I really felt that it was important to take nostalgia and put it in context. And also it was important to write a book about games that's really well written and not badly edited like some of the other books that I've read. And so it inspired me to try myself. And so I did. And so this game is so important because I just have so, so many memories. And I don't want to spoil everything that I have written in the book. But let's get into it. Okay, so the Game Boy was a big deal for me. And when I got this game, it was just so charming and so cool. And it was not so difficult for me to get play because I wasn't great at games at the time. But the world of it just dragged me in so much. I remember getting so... I had this sort of romantic feeling for the main character's friend, Marin, you know, that she sort of has this sort of teenage, you know, kind of summer vacation romantic interlude with, I guess you could say. The whole game, to me, very much feels like summer vacation. You go to the beach, and you find an island, and you have this, like, limited time, and then you have to, like, go home. And that's kind of what the game is about, in a way. And you meet a girl, and, you know, if you're into girls, if you're not into girls, then that's fine. I happen to be, so, yeah. You meet a girl, and you're like, oh, and you're friends, and it's like, it's great, and you just want to spend time forever, but you have to go home. And that's what I think The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening is about to me. And so, that happened to me right after I had gotten the game. We went to the beach, and I was playing the game, and I started making the island on the beach, and I made this big, big, giant, like, map of the island on the beach. I mean, it was big, and I had the whole island mapped out. I had the mountain made. I had made, like, an egg-shaped thing. I had all these dungeons in it, and I'd, like, carved up little castles and towns and everything, and people were actually, it was big enough that people were actually, like, avoiding it. They weren't just walking over it. They were actually avoiding it, which is cool. And then this girl came up. And she had red hair, and she was really pretty and cute. And I think she was wearing, like, a Winnie the Pooh bathing suit. Because, you know, we were, like, 12, maybe 13, 11, something like that. And became friends with me, and we fed seagulls, and the seagulls attacked us trying to get crackers like they do, and we played, and I showed her all this stuff on the island, and it was great. And it was like, I really want to talk to this girl, and I want to, like, give her my address so we can write letters and stuff that you never do, you know? And it was that moment when that childhood summer vacation experience becomes real. And it was one moment where Zelda and all the experiences that Link had with Marin and on that island became real to me. And so I love that game. Now, there's also some stuff in the book about cheating in that game, about using the select glitch to warp through walls and exploring a bunch of weird gap areas in the programming, and also using a game genie to do some weird falling through the floors tricks, and more that's really interesting, and I hope you'll check out the book when it comes out to find out more about that. But that's The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. If you've never played it, please do. It is a true work of love by the creators. They literally were doing that in their spare time, after hours, not sleeping, just going after work at Nintendo and making that game for the fun of it. And that's really cool. So if you've never played Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, please do. It is very, very worthwhile. The next game that I'm thankful for is another game that was a present. It was Metroid 2, and also with that, the Game Boy. So I wanted the Game Boy so much as a kid. And I really, really, really wanted it. I just needed a Game Boy because everyone at school had one. And I didn't have one. And, you know, my dad had a pretty good amount of money, but he was always very, very conservative with his money. My mom had no money. And, they were divorced. And so she had no money, but she always wanted to try and do stuff for me. And so I remember she worked really, really hard to get me a Game Boy for Christmas one year. Or no, I think it was my birthday. I don't remember if it was Christmas or my birthday. I still get that confused. I think it was my birthday. I think that's right. I think I got it for my birthday, and then a couple months later, I got Metroid 2 for Christmas. I think that's how that went. But Metroid 2 was the game that I wanted to play. And I remember one of the reasons why I got the Game Boy, because I wanted it so, so much that I actually went and made my own Game Boy out of index cards. And I had, like, printed up little, like, games that I had made where I, like, drew the game art on it and stuff. There's more about that in the book. But basically, I just needed this game so much, and my parents could see when they saw these index card Game Boy that I had made. The Game Boy was just really, really, really important, and my mom got it to me. I was so, so thrilled. And I still say it's one of the best things she's ever done. And I've always loved the Game Boy ever since. I took it everywhere I went. We went on lots and lots of car trips as a kid. And I played Metroid 2 to death. It was the game that was out that all my friends had that I thought was great. And I remember I used to, like, map it out. We would play it, and we would get to a new area, and then we'd map it out, and then wouldn't be able to get any further, so we would stop. But I would keep mapping it, and I would, like, design my own areas and stuff of what I thought it was going to be like later as we went through. And then it turned out to be wrong, but, you know, that's the fun of it, right? So Metroid 2 was this game that just was really, really cool because it was the reason why I got a Game Boy. And I really, really love it to this day. It's not the best game ever. The remakes are so-so. Both the official one and the unofficial one. They have their flaws. The original has its flaws, let's be honest. But nevertheless, Metroid 2 has a really warm place in my heart. And it's a game that I'm truly thankful for. And it's funny too, because I will say that I hadn't played any of the other Metroid games at the time. So it was kind of my first Metroid experience. And I'm really thankful for that. Next is a game for the PC, which many of you might know. It's called Monkey Island. And I think it's called The Secret of Monkey Island is the first game in the series. And I don't know how this happened, but my school, my little Christian school that I went to, had a computer lab, and somehow we had a copy of Monkey Island. And it was not like somebody's copy that they, you know, found and copied or, you know, something like that. This was a real boxed copy of it that we had at our computer lab at the school. And this was one of my favorite games to play in the computer lab. Me and a friend of mine, her name was Julie, we had a contest to see who could get the furthest in the game fastest and who could beat it. And I think She eventually won. Or no, she didn't win. But she was able to figure out one of the puzzles before I did. I think it was the cereal in the cupboard puzzle. I think we spent like 2 weeks trying to figure out that puzzle. And I think she beat me to it. But I think in the end, I think I actually beat the game before she did. I don't remember for sure. But it was really, really cool. I loved that game. It was so much fun. And this was when our computer lab still had Packard Bell machines with 486 processors. SX. They were not the best. I think they were 33 megahertz SX and 4 megabytes of RAM. Not great, even at the time. But it was cool. And they didn't have sound cards. They had just the beat speakers and that kind of thing. So we played that, and we also played X-Wing. And someone had... we had Police Quest, although we never could get anywhere in that game, so I didn't really play that very much. But... X-Wing and Monkey Island were the two big games that we played when I was in middle school, I guess you could call it. We had, like, middle school and high school combined. We had, like, a junior and senior kind of mixed thing. But anyway, so that was a really, really important game. And here's the cool part. This really makes me thankful for it. When we decided to upgrade all of our computers to shiny new Pentium computers, I guess the school found some money for a budget, we built a computer lab, and what we did was we took all of the old computers, the 486s, and decided to put them in all the teachers' rooms, so they would have their own computers. And to do that, we needed to make a network. And I was really good friends with the guy who ran all the computer lab stuff, and so during the summer vacation when they were running the networks, he offered to let me come and help if I wanted to, and I was like, sure. So I went in during summer, and for several weeks, and I went around and just helped him install the network. And we ran cable, and we, you know, set up the networking, you know, upgraded all the Windows 3.11 to the networking version. I think it's 3.14. And set up all that kind of stuff, and then I became the network administrator, or the assistant network administrator for the new computers. And when it was all done, we had one computer that was not great shape. It had a bad hard drive that he let me have, and one monitor that was weird. He let me have it. The monitor did this thing where the screen would go blank unless you put weight on top of it. So I had to like get some really heavy books and put it on top of it, and then the screen would like unfold back into its original shape. Not really unfold, but like the picture would unfold. So, like the laser was like not like going up and down or something. I don't know. It was really weird. So he gave me that, and he gave me the school's copy of Monkey Island on 5.5 and a quarter inch floppy disk. Sorry, can't speak there for a second. And I still have that copy of the game. I don't know what happened to the Dial-A-Pirate. The Dial-A-Pirate disappeared at some point. I have since made a new one, but nevertheless, I still have that game, I still have the floppy disks, and I still have the box and everything. And fun fact, I was recently able to use a PC-98 to copy those 5 1/4 inch floppies onto 3.5 and use it on a DOS machine that I have put together here in Japan. So I can play that game again, and I've got a Sound Blaster and all that kind of stuff. So I have Monkey Island all over again, and it's great. Next is Final Fantasy, the original Final Fantasy for the NES. I saw this game one time when I was at a friend's place at a party, and I didn't understand it at all, but I thought it was really cool, and he wouldn't let me play it, so I think I played it for like 5 minutes, and then I didn't see it again for about 4 or 5 years. And my dad got remarried, and we had a new family with new cousins and everything, and one of them was a really big gamer, and he got me into playing Final Fantasy, but I didn't have a Super Nintendo, and he was teaching me how to play Final Fantasy 2. So, his parents got me Final Fantasy 1 for the Nintendo for Christmas that year. And I still think it was the best, other than maybe Star Tropics, it was like the best Nintendo game that I ever got for a present. And I love that game to death. In fact, it's still sitting right here beside me in my Japanese Famicom. I have the AV Famicom, and it's modded for RGB. Because once you've got money, you can do stuff like that, I guess. I don't have tons of money, but, you know, enough. So anyway, Final Fantasy 1, it's this great, great game that I love, and it's another one where the soundtrack was really important. I used to pretend that I was, like, in the Final Fantasy world listening to the soundtrack when we'd go to the lake and ride around on boats and stuff with my family. I would always sit in the front by myself and listen to Final Fantasy music and imagine I was on the ship from Final Fantasy and all that kind of stuff. Final Fantasy 1 really captured my attention and my imagination in a way that not a lot of other games did at the time. Because a lot of the games that I had at the time were either sports games, or it was stuff like, you know, Contra or Metroid or things like that. I mean, I had Zelda, and that really captured my attention. But Final Fantasy was like, wow, role-playing. And it really was like the first role-playing game that I got into. And then there's the next role-playing game that I got into, which is Pokemon. I guess you could call Pokemon a role-playing game. I am very thankful for Pokemon Blue, and I'm also very thankful for Pokemon Sapphire. And the reason is because not only did Pokemon Blue get me get into Pokemon, but also it made me more sociable. It got me to have more friends. I talked to people that I didn't normally talk to, and that was really cool. And I didn't get into the card game at the time that Pokemon Blue was out, you know, it was like the big fad and everything, but I just didn't have the money for it, so I didn't really get into it. But I loved Pokemon Blue. I memorized all the Pokemon, and I would play with my friend, and I would always win because I had this Dugtrio that was amazing, and I just really loved it. But then I graduated from high school and didn't get a chance to play Gold and Silver. And then after, when I had to leave college for various reasons, which I won't go into, not bad, just, you know, personal stuff when you're a young transgender person going through life in a Christian college, it gets difficult sometimes. And so I was suddenly in this position where I had to make all new friends, and things were really crazy, and I was kind of down and out. But my friend convinced me to start playing Pokemon again because Ruby and Sapphire was out in Game Boy Advance, and I was like, okay, I'll try it. So I got a Game Boy Advance, and I got Sapphire, and I loved it. It was so cool. And that actually got me eventually into playing the card game. And the card game was a big, important thing in my life for a while because I met a lot of new friends. I became a gym leader. I became a tournament organizer and also a tournament judge. I was able to go to the World Championships in 2004 and play in the World Championships. I won my way into that, so I got a free trip to Florida for that. And it was really, really cool, and it was just a big, important part of my life for a long time, and it made a lot of networking and things. But also, when I was applying to be a teacher in Japan, I put it on my resume, and it was something that was specifically brought up, because I was able to explain how I had experience working with kids from my time being a Pokemon judge and having to teach them and explain things to them in simple English so they, you know, so they could understand it. And that really did help me get my job. So you can say that Pokemon helped me get my job in Japan. Next is Ys 4 and Ys 5. Now, there's a couple things with this. So each one of these has a special reason why I like them. Ys 4, Dawn of Ys, is the first one I'm going to mention. And that's because I was given this as a gift. When I studied in Japan in 2013, one of my friends from the Ys forums was also in Japan at the time. And so I got to hang out with her in Tokyo for that one day. And it was really cool because she wasn't Japanese. She's from Scotland. So if you're listening, Ellie, hi! She knew that I was coming. And she went out and bought me a copy of Ys 4, The Dawn of Ys, for PC Engine, before I got there, and gave it to me as a present, as a Welcome to Japan present. And I really can't state just how awesome that was, to like suddenly appear in a foreign country, and there's a friend that you've known for a year or two now, who gives you a present that's something that you always wanted and never thought you would ever be able to own. Not always wanted, you know, wanted it for a few years. And it was just kind of like, wow. And so ever since then, I had a tradition where whenever one of my friends comes to visit me in Japan or moves to Japan, my rule is to buy them an Ys game. And quite a few of them have gone unplayed. I think not everyone is as into the series as I am. But, nevertheless, that's my tradition. And so if you come visit me in Japan for some reason, expect to get an Ys game. Most of them are fairly inexpensive. So I do that. And so I'm really thankful for that, because it was an important thing. And also, I really like Dawn of Ys. It's a great, great Ys game. I'm also thankful for Ys 4, the Mask of the Sun. And the reason I'm thankful for that is because, also like Ys 5, I want to thank Gideon Z of Aeon Genesis, I think that's how you pronounce his name, for translating those games. Because he put a lot of work into Ys 4 and Ys 5. And I didn't get a chance to play Ys 4 until he'd done that. Actually, I played it afterwards, you know. But I wouldn't have had a chance to play it if he hadn't done that, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I really did like that game. I didn't love it as much as Dawn of Ys, but it was the first version that I got to play, and it was really cool. And of course, I had to emulate it at the time, because, you know. But nevertheless, I was playing it while I was working in the census office at college. Except this is the second time I went to college. I went to college again. I'm getting a lot of personal information here. Anyway. And Ys 4 was this game that I was playing, and I was listening to the music in my car while I was driving around working for the census in the middle of these huge, not huge, but these nice big mountains with tons and tons and tons of trees, and it really felt like I was in Salsetta. And when I would go on breaks, I would play Ys 4 on my breaks in my car in the middle of mountains, and it was so cool. And so Aeon Genesis and Gideon there really helped me be able to enjoy that game and enjoy that time when I was bored. So I'm really thankful for that. I'm also really, really thankful for Ys 5, because there is no way I would have played Ys 5 without him. And it took him quite a while to make it. It was a very difficult game for him to fan translate, because there were some glitches with the way the text was handled and the menus, apparently. And a lot of people bugged him about it, and it almost drove him crazy, I think. He got a little bit upset with some fans that were, you know, yelling at him about it. And, I mean, this was a fan project that he was doing on his own time. And I was really, when he did release it, right around Christmas, or it was either Christmas or Thanksgiving, I think it was Thanksgiving, of the year, I was going on a trip, and I went down, and, immediately after the trip, I came back and downloaded it and played through it, and then I went to my former roommate's apartment to make him play it, because we were friends for a long time, and we were gaming, you know, friends and that kind of thing, and then we ended up sharing an apartment because it was convenient, and we were going to the same college and all this kind of stuff, but things, you know, got difficult as life does. And I didn't really get to see him very much anymore after that. But this game was like the last game that I got to sit down and play with him before I didn't really get to see him ever again. He moved and stuff like that. And so it's a really warm, fond memory. And I also really love the soundtrack for that game, even though it's very kind of odd for Ys as a series. And it was just this game that's kind of like a hidden gem to me, because it's considered not very good. It's often considered the weakest entry in the series, and most people overlook it, but Gideon took the time to translate it, and I really enjoyed it. I loved the plot, I loved the characters, most of them, and I really liked the music, and I really hope Falcom re-releases it and does a really good job with it, because it deserves it. Actually, I think the story is very inventive and interesting, and so I'm very thankful for that game, for both of those. Dragon Quest 2. A lot of you that have played Dragon Quest 2 are thinking, why would you like Dragon Quest 2? And the answer is simple. Dragon Quest 2 on the Game Boy, which is, I think, a much better, mostly much better version of it than the original, really saved me during a really hard time. I was in college, and we were having this horrible, horrible blizzardy winter, and during that winter, the blizzard was so bad that classes got canceled, like, I don't remember, it was something like three or four weeks out of the whole semester of classes got canceled because of the snow. And no, sorry, I take that back. This was a year after that, where we had another snow. It was like the snap blizzard that came through and hit like the last month of that semester. Not as bad as the first one, where it was like the blizzard for 3 weeks, but it was like a week of blizzard, and it was right during exams. And so I was in theater, and I had to do this project for the exam, and it was a group project, and so we had to meet at the school to work on it, but nobody could get to the school hardly, because the buses weren't running, or if they were, it was really, 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 really cold and that kind of thing, and people would have to walk and stuff. So I was having to like walk to the school or stand out in this horrifyingly brisk wind with snow blowing literally into my coat. I had this coat that was buttoned all the way up, and snow would blow up underneath the coat into the inside of the coat. It was that bad. And the only thing that was my saving grace during this whole time was Dragon Quest II. I had started playing it on the Game Boy Advance for some reason, and I had Dragon Quest II on the Game Boy Advance, and I had these gloves. Those little cheap, you know, woolen gloves that I was playing with Dragon Quest II. And that was the game that got me through that winter. I would go home and I would play it on the Game Boy Player on the TV. And then I would go to the school for these meetings and I would play it on the bus. And I'm still really sad because I eventually lost that Game Boy Advance on the bus later. But Dragon Quest II was a lifesaver, and even though it's not that great of a game, I always play it a little bit around Christmas time because it's kind of a tradition, especially if it's snowing, play Dragon Quest II in the snow. It's a hard, brisk battle of a game, and it's a hard, brisk battle of a winter, and that's Dragon Quest II for me. And the next game, talking about Dragon Quest, is Dragon Quest Builders. Now you're thinking, what? This isn't a retro game at all. And there's a reason for that. Dragon Quest Builders is so cool. I love this game so much. And I never really got into Minecraft. I think I played like the demo version of it, or the game that he released before Minecraft, when it was in beta. But I didn't really play Minecraft. So I thought it was a cool concept, but I just didn't get into it for some reason. But I was here in Japan. I was washing clothes one day at the coin laundry down the street. And I had gotten something on my coat, somehow, I don't know how, but it had gotten this grease stain on it. So I had to go over to the sink in the coin laundry and wash the stain out and then put it into the dryer. And I normally don't walk over there, but I did this time because I needed to wash this coat out, the stain. And I looked over and there was a lost and found box, and in the lost and found box, it had been sitting there for a while, apparently, was a Vita version of Dragon Quest Builders. Just the cartridge by itself, along with a bunch of other stuff. It was just like underneath some stuff, and you know, it had been sitting there for a while. And so eventually I decided no one's going to ever find this because it's not where they left it, and it's been sitting here for a while. So I took it because I hate to see really cool stuff go to waste. I'm one of these people that I like find things on the side of the road, and I'll pick them up and take them home, and either I'll keep them, I'll clean them up and keep them, or I'll get rid of them somehow in a way that I feel is more like nice to the item than it just being like laying on the side of the road. Like there's this one little cute Pikachu toy that I found on the side of the road, and it was so sad because it had like fallen out of like a car or someone's bike basket or something, and it was a little bit scratched up and had some dirt on it, and I just thought, oh, it's so sad. So I took it home, and I cleaned it up, and it still sits on my desk, and it's got a home, because I'm that kind of person. And so I felt that way about this Dragon Quest game. I didn't want it to just sit there going to waste and not getting used, so I brought it home, and I started playing it. And my Japanese is not great, but I had some guides and that kind of stuff, and I played through Dragon Quest Builders on the Vita, and I thought it was so awesome. I didn't finish it. I played through like the second area, and then I got the English version, but I was kind of sad because I couldn't play it on Vita TV. And I could play the cartridge version on Vita TV because I had like a hack or whatever for it, so that you could play games that were originally blocked, you could play them anyway or something. I don't know. I eventually had to get rid of that, so oh well. I got the English version, and weirdly enough, the English version read my Japanese save file, and I was able to save it. I just changed the name to an English version of my name, which was really, really weird, so I didn't have to start over. But then I saw that it was coming out on Switch, and so I decided I'm going to get it switched when this game comes out. And that's what I did. And that's why I have a Switch, is because of Dragon Quest Builders. And it's one of the best systems I've owned in quite a while. And I sent my copy of Dragon Quest Builders, my Vita copy, to a friend who is probably going to send it to someone else. And I think it's going to be kind of the traveling Dragon Quest Builders. Because I don't want it to go to waste. I want it to get used and loved. And I've loved it. So there. Last, I'm going to talk about two games by the same company for the MSX. These are Chaos Begins and Children of the Night. And I'm thankful for these games because of my friend Tom Lipschultz, who has been on the podcast before. He helped me very, very much in getting these games. He was able to order them for me, and because I couldn't order them very well at the time because of weird stuff with Japanese credit card stuff and international shipping and all this kind of weird stuff. So he bought them for me and then sent them to me, and I paid him for them, you know, whatever. But without his help, I could not have played these games, and it's really important to me because Chaos Begins is the first game on MSX that I was able to actually beat. And I sat down with it for a while, I played through it, I really, really, really liked it. I thought it was just this cool game, and I still think it's one of my favorite games on the MSX. And Children of the Night I haven't gotten to play as much yet, but it's equally as cool in a different way, but definitely equally as cool. And recently I actually got a chance to talk with one of the creators of the game, and potentially... soon. They said that they would be interested in doing a podcast, so potentially soon they might see a podcast from them about Chaos Begins and Children of the Night. I want to make sure that I've played through Children of the Night a little bit more before I do that. But I'm really thankful for that game because it taught me that A, it is possible to beat MSX games, even if we are talking about a homebrew. And B, Children of the Night is so cool. It's got all these characters that I love, and it's great. And I would not have been able to play those games without my friend Tom. So I want to say thank you very much to him. I want to say thank you to Robin and to Belinda and to Eleanor and to
Mike, who made the theme song on this podcast.
I want to say thank you to my friend Logan, who has helped me a lot throughout the years here in Japan and before then. I want to say thank you to Yumi. I want to say thank you to Lisa and Rowan for listening and supporting. Everybody that I can think of and everybody that I can't think of that's helped me in some way. There's a whole bunch of people who have been friends. I want to say thank you to Skywells and everyone at 46 Okuman team, Koshi and Holloway Tape. I want to say thank you to John Hasink for making so much great music. Please, if you're listening, John, your music is great. I want to say thank you to everyone who's taken the time to help me in some way. And I want to say thank you to you, the listener, for listening and making this podcast great. I hope. I'm really excited about making more future episodes. And, of course, I hope you will support me with Patreon. But blah, 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 blah. I don't want to be shameless here. I want to say thank you. So thank you so much. And I hope that you will be thankful for the games in your life. Because they're important. We don't play them just for fun. A lot of these games we play because they mean something. And recently I've gotten to play a few games that are important like that. Like Read Only Memories and Valhalla and some other things. Again, thanks to people who sent them to me. Because it's kind of difficult for me to get them sometimes here.
So, this has been Thanks Gaming. And next week I'm hoping to bring the 46 Okuman interview part 2 to you. So please stay tuned. And last, of course, you can find us on Twitter. It's at DoorDunPodcast. That's at Door, D-U-N, Podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.